tuned in to the Community Cats podcast. Ready? Let's go.
Welcome to the Community Cats podcast. I am your host, Stacey LeBaron. I've been involved helping homeless cats for over 20 years with the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. The goal of this podcast is to expose you to amazing people who are improving the lives of cats. I hope these interviews will help you learn how you can turn your passion for cats into action. And today we are speaking with Dr. Kimberly Mann, as well as Stephen Martinez. Dr. Mann is the medical director and sole surgeon of the York County SPCA Spay-Neuter Clinic, a high-quality, high-volume spay-neuter clinic in New York, Pennsylvania. She attended the University of Pennsylvania, where she obtained her Bachelor of Arts in 2009 and her veterinary medical degree in 2013. She has experience practicing in emergency medicine, primary care medicine, and high-volume spay-neuter. She's been with the York County SPCA since 2015 and has helped grow the clinic's impact from around 6,000 spay-neuter surgeries per year to over 11,000 per year in 2023, with a team of one doctor and up to 7 full-time support staff. Dr. Mann is a mission-driven individual who is passionate about providing affordable spay-neuter services to as many patients in need as possible. She places special focus on patient and staff safety, surgical efficiency, and a team mentality when it comes to running a high-volume clinic. She has a soft spot for senior pugs and special needs cats and currently shares her home with her husband, Robert. There are 3 pugs and 4 cats. Stephen Martinez is the executive director of the York County Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. Stephen supports a staff of 60 employees and a 25,000 square foot building that houses over 110 dogs, 320 cats, 5 small animals, and a veterinary wing, a high volume spay neuter clinic, and lots of animal enrichment, human service, and educational programs. During his tenure, his team increased the York County SPCA's save rate from 53% in 2018 to 95.1% in 2022 by successfully implementing a 3-year strategic plan. Stephen and his team also increased their operating budget by nearly $3 million over the same time period. Stephen earned his MBA from Loyola University Chicago and his Bachelor of Science in Business Administration from Oklahoma State University. In 2010, Stephen thru-hiked the Appalachian Trail. He continues to cultivate his interest in the outdoors by fly fishing, golfing, and exploring rail trails. Stephen and his wife, Allison, enjoy spending time with their 3 dogs, 3 cats, and 5 chickens. Fantastic. Wow. So I can tell you, Dr. Mann and Stephen, the two of you, you're going to have like the Super Bowl, like your pets versus Stephen's pets. Dr. Mann, you both have a team of animals in your houses. So it seems silly to ask this question, but I'm going to ask this question of Dr. Mann. How did you become passionate about cats?
So I have been an animal lover since, you know, the day I was born. I decided to become a veterinarian early in my undergraduate studies. And once I became a veterinarian, I knew that I wanted to go into something where I could do lots of surgery. That's where I felt my skill was. That's where I felt like I could make a difference. And the easiest place for me to start doing that was as an emergency veterinarian. So I worked at a veterinary ER in York, Pennsylvania for about 2 years after graduation. And there I really was exposed to the difference in access to care for different animals in our community. And, you know, after my 2 years working at the ER, again, I loved surgery. I knew I wanted to continue to be able to do surgery quite often, but I also wanted to find a niche in veterinary medicine where I could really make a difference for those, you know, most vulnerable, most in need animals. So that led me to looking for a job in nonprofit, and that led me to the York County SPCA in 2015. So I really feel like the biggest difference I can make as a veterinarian and as a surgeon is to, you know, help community cats. They are certainly the animals in our community that are the most vulnerable, that we can make the biggest impact on, you know, quality of life wise. And it's something that is very, very rewarding each and every day. So it reaffirms my choice to enter this field every day that I do surgery.
And Stephen, how'd you get to be so passionate about cats?
I just wanted to work with Dr. Mann. Yeah, that was a heck of a bio, Dr. Mann. You're awesome. I think high volume spay neuter surgery, like what Dr. Mann does over in the clinic, is how you save the most number of animal lives. So I think there's a big place where my passion comes from. I think from like a business management perspective, we were getting overrun by community cats all the time. Like we were just getting dumped on by cats day after day. And we were just, you know, we were in over our heads. And so we were just chasing our tails and we couldn't get ahead. And the staff was stressed out and you know, we couldn't like, we weren't taking charge of our destiny, right? And so we needed to get a handle on that so that way we could run a good business and save even more animal lives. And so I think even from like a, there's a lot of reasons why I'm passionate about it, but bringing in my kind of business perspective, I think that if you can run good programs like a high volume clinic and community cat programs, then you get to be in charge of your program and save, you know, more animal lives that way.
Dr. Mann, if you wouldn't mind just sharing with us a little bit, what is your clinic like?
So we are a high volume, high quality spay neuter clinic, and we provide services to the public. So for publicly owned dogs and cats. And then we also provide spay neuter services for community cats through our trap neuter return program. So our clinic is very busy. We're open 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. And we typically do on average about 50 to 60 surgeries per day. In order for us to do 50 to 60 surgeries per day, I have a team of the most dedicated individuals, you know, I could ask for helping me. And, you know, it's a very busy job. It's a very physically demanding and mentally demanding job. But, you know, I think that each and every one of us over there are mission-driven people and, you know, we love what we do. When I started here in 2015, was doing about 25 to 30 surgeries a day. So over the past 8 years, we have gone through a multitude of changes in order to increase our capacity, in order to just make both surgeries and also all of our other processes more efficient. So it's really always a work in progress in order to, you know, serve as many animals as possible.
So I would assume you must work off of multiple tables, yes?
Yes. So we have two tables in our prep area where up to six animals can be prepped at a time by our veterinary technicians. And then I have a separate room where I do surgery, where I have two surgical tables. So, you know, by the time I'm closing up on one surgery, the next patient is being brought into the next table. That way, once I'm finished with that surgery, I can then turn that patient over to our recovery technician and then get started on the next one. Yeah, decreasing any amount of time between the surgeries obviously makes it that we can do, you know, more and more surgeries safely during the day.
One of the challenges for our community cat trappers is being able to trap and hold and then drop off the cats and bring the cats in the traps, but they've got, you know, 5 million pieces of newspaper in there and, you know, and food and, you know, whatever. The whole backyard is in the trap with the cat and whatever. You know, what are your guidelines in handling community cats for best practice?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So just to take what you said about, you know, sometimes it's difficult for people to hold cats and what do we do when we trapped them if we don't have an appointment? Something that's really special about our clinic is that we do offer a walk-in service for our trap neuter return program. So Monday through Thursday, anybody, they don't have to live in our county. Anybody can bring one cat per person per day without an appointment. So if you happen to see that one straggler and you get a trap outside and you're able to trap it, we certainly don't want them to have to make you wait for an appointment to bring that cat in. We want to be able to, you know, get it in and taken care of as quickly as possible. So that is something that we offer specifically for those situations. As far as our guidelines with transporting and, you know, handling cats in traps, you know, I mentioned in my bio, I'm very safety minded when it comes to both the patients and the staff. So we are pretty strict about the types of traps that we will accept, that they have to be in good working order, that we're able to easily visualize and sedate the cat, you know, before just by looking through the bars of the trap. As far as, you know, what comes along with the cats, we don't really have any rules on that. And sometimes it's a fun little treasure hunt trying to pull the cat out of the trap amongst everything it came with. But typically what we recommend is, you know, use a sturdy, appropriately sized, humane box trap. The cat has to be transported in that. We ask it to be covered in order to try and keep the cat as calm as possible. And, you know, keeping them in a temperature controlled environment until they're able to get here for surgery is really what we recommend.
And what age do you do the spays and neuters? How young are you able to do the surgery?
So we're located in the state of Pennsylvania. And in Pennsylvania, animals have to be 12 weeks old in order to get a rabies vaccine. Our mindset when we do trap neuter return is, you know, we're obviously spaying or neutering that animal. We're giving it a rabies vaccine, and then we're giving it an ear tip, which is an indicator to the public that not only has this animal been spayed or neutered, but it also has been given a rabies vaccination. So since we're not able to do the rabies vaccination in Pennsylvania until they're 12 weeks old, we will not spay or neuter trap neuter return cats until they're approximately 12 weeks old. So we try to work with people as much as we can to help them guesstimate, you know, how old the cat is. Certainly, we don't weigh those cats until they are sedated for the staff's safety. So it can be a little bit tricky sometimes not knowing until they're already sedated. But in those cases, we ask people to hold on to those cats to kind of foster them until they're able to get them up to weight and bring them back in.
Do you have any restrictions with regards to spaying and neutering community cats through the wintertime, or what's your recommended recovery time? People say 24 hours, people say 48 hours. A week ago, I had somebody tell me 10 days, and I was like, so what is your standard protocol for holding recovery, and does it vary during the time of the year?
Yeah, so time of year, I mean, we advocate doing trap neuter return all year round. Certainly doing trap neuter return in the winter is what's going to prevent most of those spring litters. So certainly I always advocate for safe winter trapping. As far as recovery time after surgery, I am of the mindset that it can be very, very stressful to keep cats in a trap for a prolonged period of time, especially, you know, these cats that are not socialized with humans. So we will typically recommend that the cat be kept in the trap overnight after surgery. And then if it is, you know, eats and drinks and looks bright and alert, that it can be released the following morning. And that is simply from experience, seeing, you know, how cats can continue to actually injure themselves or stress themselves out when being kept in a trap long term, and that they do tend to do very well when being released shortly after surgery.
So, Stephen, I want to ask you a few questions about, you know, starting this clinic and getting this clinic going. A lot of organizations think starting a spay neuter clinic is an expensive endeavor. And it's maybe not 100% mission serving because it's not touching those shelter animals. What's your thought process about why do you have this clinic?
Because we want to control population growth rates. I don't want animals coming into the building. It makes sense. For me, both of those, the shelter and the clinic, are together as one organization. Without one, we can't serve the mission of the York County SPCA, which is to save animal lives. So for me, they go together. The clinic was opened in 2013. And since Dr. Mann's been the medical director, we've increased our surgeries from, I think, 7,000 is what she said, to now over 11,000 surgeries. We used to do 25 a day. Now, what did you do, like 70 a day?
We did 60 today.
60 today. All right, we had like 25 walk-ins. She usually does probably closer to 70 a day. So just think of like the compounding impact on the number of animal lives that are not being born, which means that are not coming into the York County SPCA shelter.
And are you doing any sort of targeting with your strategy? So how are you measuring your impact and, you know, creating success?
Yeah. So when I started back in 2019, we were struggling with save rate. So our save rate was 53%, which meant that about half the animals that came in alive in 2018 did not have a live outcome. And when we did we did a life-saving gap analysis. So what that is we just looked at where are we losing the most number of animal lives. And the answer was by far cats. Like our save rate for cats was really low. And when you look at our dog save rate, like it wasn't great, but it was okay. It was like in the 80% range. So clearly cats is where all of our efforts needed to go. We needed to pour our time, money, and attention into addressing our community cat problem because we were just chasing our tail. Like we weren't able to get ahead. We were just constantly euthanizing 40 animals a day, you know, cats, healthy cats that should have had a live outcome if we had community cat programs in place. And we just weren't able to get ahead. And so we finally buckled down, you know, raised a bunch of money to get these programs going. And so from my perspective, like from a strategic perspective, if you can kind of get your community cat program strong in conjunction with a successful high volume spay neuter clinic, then you can have success. And so we went from 53% to 65% the next year, to 79% the year after that, to 85%. And then last year, we ended at a 95% save rate. And right now, we're still hovering at a 95% save rate, which now means that we are in charge of our destiny. We are a well-run organization. And now we can start thinking about innovative, progressive programs that can, you know, maybe contribute to the best practices that exist in our field.
Calling all kitten enthusiasts, get ready for a one-of-a-kind, two-day virtual experience dedicated entirely to kittens. Introducing the 2024 Online Kitten Conference, taking place on June 8th and 9th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Time and presented by the Community Cats Podcast and the National Kitten Coalition. Prepare to be whisked away into a world of adorable antics and invaluable insight as leading experts gather to celebrate and educate on all things kitten. From newborn care to playful behavior, this conference is a treasure trove of knowledge for anyone committed to improving the lives of these fluffy bundles of joy. Whether you're a seasoned kitten rescuer or new to animal welfare and eager to learn the ropes, the Online Kitten Conference offers a perfect blend of practical advice and in-depth details about the new and the now in kitten care. From empowering fosters to preventing upper respiratory disease, from kitten socialization and behavioral well-being, to what we know about kitten mortality and how we can help each other deal with loss, the weekend's live sessions, engaging workshops, and intimate discussions are crafted to nurture your passion and enhance your knowledge of these pint-sized purr machines so you can make a difference. Access to our exclusive Facebook group is included with your registration. There you can connect with fellow kitten lovers from across the globe, share your experiences, and discover innovative approaches to kitten care and advocacy. Also included is access to recordings of all sessions. You can review anything you miss, or if you found something particularly interested, check it out again. And you'll also be able to participate in Fun Cat trivia and prizes. Some lucky attendee will even win a cage from CDE Cages. With the convenience of an online platform, you can join in the fun from the comfort of your own couch, surrounded by your own furry friends, and probably your kitten fosters. Visit communitycatspodcast.com/kittencon now to reserve your spot in the 2024 Online Kitten Conference. Once again, that website for details and registration is communitycatspodcast.com/kittencon. Let's come together, celebrate the smallest felines, and pave the way for a bright future for these precious creatures. Don't miss out. Register today. In a recent study, 97% of respondents said that pets are family. Communities can play a vital role in helping to keep families together. Whether it's reuniting lost pets with their owners, donating pet supplies or funds for pet owners in need, or offering short or long-term fostering, people can help keep pets and their people together. We just have to show them how. Did you know there are resources you can use to help bring attention to the programs you offer to help them do just that? From public service announcements, short videos, printable posters, online and social graphics, and much more. Find your resources at www.petsandpeopletogether.org/campaign-resources. #BeAHelper. Are you a cat lover? Want to make a real difference in your community? Join us at the TNR Certification Workshop brought to you by Community Cats Podcast and Neighborhood Cats. Learn the best practices of trap, neuter, return from experts in the field. Help improve the lives of community cats while gaining valuable skills. Whether you're a seasoned pro or new to TNR, this workshop is for you. Get certified and become a catalyst for change. Ready to make a positive impact? Register now at www.communitycatspodcast.com/gettnrcertified. Transform lives one cat at a time. Join us and turn your passion for cats into action.
So you're talking about moving from, you know, this save rate to the next one, to the next one. Number one, people are going to say, well, where was the funding for that program? How is it structured? Did you create a TNR or community cat program with manager and team and, you know, volunteers or staff that went out and trapped? Or did you liaison with small organizations? You know, what did that sort of organizational chart look like?
Yeah, well, we wrote a 3-year strategic plan and we just got to work on it. And the first thing, what was the first thing we started on? Was it, gosh, it's been like 3 years ago, 4 years ago now. There's a pandemic in the middle there. So
one of the first things that we did was actually an overhaul of our IT infrastructure.
Oh, yeah.
Because we really weren't able to serve many people by doing things on pen and paper like we were. So we got new software for the shelter. We got new software for the clinic. People were now able to schedule appointments very easily online. I think we went from being booked out about like 7 to 10 days in advance to being booked out 3 or 4 months in advance. So the demand was there. That initial change, though, like made us very accessible to people. So
yeah. And then another thing that we did was we became strategic communicators. So we really got good at communicating with our audience. And part of that means we became transparent with our audience. So we just let them know we're having problems. Here's our problem. But we also have ideas. Here's our ideas for saving more animal lives. Are you in? And then most of the time when you communicate honestly and with your community and you have a plan, you don't just want to like be honest about your problems without showing leadership, right? But if you have that leadership piece of it in place, then usually people will mobilize around you to try to help advance your cause. And so that was another thing that we did was we were very honest in our communication with our audience so that we could rally, save, you know, raise money, and then roll out those programs. And the other thing that we did, you know, going to Dr. Mann's point about having IT, is that we needed to get a handle on our data, because we needed to be able to tell the story, but we needed to support our assumptions with data. So, you know, like sophisticated funders aren't going to just say, this is the right thing to do because we feel like it's the right thing to do. You also have to bring the proof. And then if you can do that, if you can speak to them as business people, as well as people who want to do right by the community, then you can usually bring people along that compels them to give money. And so we were able to tell our story by getting a handle on our data. And then once we rolled these programs out, we were able to say, hey, we went from 53% to 65%. We think we're onto something. Will you keep giving us money so we can keep doing the work? And they'll say, yes. And then we get to 79%, which is a huge leap. And now suddenly people want to be on a winning team. And you start getting like momentum and the wind at your back. And we're able to kind of keep rolling with these programs because now the community feels bought in and a part of our success. So that would be like an example of strategic communication and how you can use that effectively.
So Dr. Mann, I'm going to ask you the makeup of the clinic. It seems like a majority of the surgeries you do are community cats. And then there's a percentage that are owned cats. What we saw in Massachusetts over time was the TNR numbers went down and then the public assistance went up in terms of numbers of cats needing assistance as we became more effective or more impactful in the communities with our targeted programs. Are you seeing any of that changing over time?
I would say that right now we're not seeing that shift. Something in our area that is a struggle is certainly access to TNR resources for people. So we are obviously a big clinic that do thousands of surgeries a year, but there are not a ton of other options for people. So what we tend to have is we certainly do a large proportion of our community cats from York County, but we also have people traveling from surrounding counties. We have people traveling as far as, you know, from 2 or 3 hours away to get to us. So I think, you know, if we start to really see the population numbers in York County go down, we're still going to continue to see that demand for TNR services, just because we do tend to draw from a lot of areas around us. We have always had a lot of demand for our owned animal surgeries for both dogs and cats. Those tend to, you know, schedule out sometimes 5 or 6 months in advance because they're in such high demand. So it's a little bit difficult to tell if that's going up because it's been at such a high level. But I would say, you know, over the past maybe 3 or 4 years, which is really when our efficiency has increased, the number of surgeries we do has increased, I would say we're seeing equal growth really between both the owned animals and the trap, neuter, return services.
I would assume when you were doing your strategic planning process that you did somewhat of a needs assessment. Are there other clinics in your area, or are you the only game in town?
There are other clinics in the area. Just they don't have the capacity to, you know, spay neuter at the level that we do. There are, I would say, like, what, two?
There's at least 2 or 3 smaller clinics in surrounding counties.
The other thing is that we're just getting better at communicating with our community. And so I think when you do a better job of promoting the programs that you have, you know, the other side of that is like, oh, crap, now people are going to use those services, right? And so it was, you know, there was a point where we were just overwhelmed and we didn't really need to promote our programs because we were already doing, you know, we had more demand than we could possibly supply. And now we've expanded our capacity, gotten a great leadership team in place. Now we can do more. And now word's getting out, like word of mouth kind of spreads. And we're able to promote those programs more proactively because we can take the demand.
Yeah, my understanding when I've done targeted programs, spay neuter programs within the community for owned and community cats, I usually use a 5-year window. And like that first year, you know, you're going to see an uptick and everybody's like, I don't need more cats. I don't need more cats. And it's because you've done the outreach and you're advertising that you have the spay neuter initiative and funding for the targeted area or whatever. But then it will go down significantly. Staying focused just on that targeted area and understanding that if you have capacity, you'll serve outside the targeted area, but maintaining the fact that you really want to be impactful in that target area, the area where you're getting that funder's money, right? Those are the zip codes or the communities where you've got the highest intake rates into your adoption program. Therefore, you know, you want to reduce the number of kittens that are coming in from that area, and you want to make sure that all those adult cats are spayed and neutered that are out there. And you want to also make sure that Adam and Eve get spayed and neutered before they become community cats too. So there's these multiple layers of spay neuter assistance that we need to do. So people need to realize it's a lot of volume. So we're talking 11,000 cats. That's a lot of volume. But depending on what the population area that you serve is, it may not be enough volume, you know, for that whole community or for the whole county or for the area, depending on what your sort of your area is. So Stephen, as the business thinker and the strategic thinker, you know, how can we be sustainable with our cat programs?
How can we be sustainable with our cat programs? I think that a part of that answer is maintaining a good relationship with your community. So we have to give a lot of credit to the trappers out there that do bring those animals in. Many of them are volunteers. They just believe in the cause. They understand how you save animal lives, and they do it through the good of their heart. And they're raising money on their own to help support their efforts. So I think that we need to maintain good relationships with our community and our trappers. I think that's one way to be sustainable. I think that it's another piece of it is to continue to educate our community about the value of spay neuter. Not everybody, like the funders who I speak with, quite understand that this is not just a matter of like fulfilling the mission of the York County SPCA in terms of like, you know, saving animal lives, but it's also a public health and safety perspective as well. When you get people who don't care about saving animal lives, how do you connect with them, right? Because that's sometimes where the money is. And the answer is because we're an essential service that ensures public health and safety. So now it's like understanding what are the buttons that you have to push to get people to engage with the mission of the clinic and the York County SPCA. So it's just kind of like understanding who you're talking to, who your audience is, and knowing, you know, what can move them to support those causes. So I think there's like a lot of ways you can answer that question. Those are just two that come to my mind. And Dr. Amanda, do you have any?
Something that, you know, I've been thinking about recently is it can feel very lonely as a high volume surgeon in a certain area. It feels like there's not enough of us. So, you know, I really think that sustainability wise, in order for us to make the kind of impact that we need to make in order to, you know, control community cat population levels, we need more veterinarians to do this work. We need more veterinary technicians to be interested in, you know, working in a high volume clinic. When I was in veterinary school, you know, I spent, I think, 4 days at a shelter doing spays and neuters, which, you know, those 4 days of my clinical year were some of the best days that year. But we didn't get a lot of exposure to shelter medicine or, you know, high volume surgery as a career path. So I think that's something that both Stephen and I agree on. You know, if there are veterinarians interested in learning to, you know, improve their techniques, become faster surgeons, be able to provide, you know, more services to more animals, that's something that we always need to encourage, because the more veterinarians and the more, you know, people in the community that we have invested in making this change, the better chance we have of accomplishing it.
Yeah, I agree with that. And if they want to come shadow and check it out and see what it's like, we'd be happy to welcome those folks in.
I believe Pennsylvania allows for reciprocity for veterinarians for up to 10 days. Because in many states, if a veterinarian has to go to a different state, they have to get a veterinary license in that state. And that can be very cumbersome. Florida just passed a law that allows for reciprocity down there as a volunteer. And I believe Pennsylvania already has that in place. So you are in the right location if you are willing to share and educate with others, for sure. That's fantastic. I appreciate that. And going back, Stephen, to your earlier comment about public health. So Esther Meckler, founder of United Spay Alliance, she refers to spay neuter as being public health for pets. That is actually a tagline for the podcast we have started in 2024 called United We Spay. And that's the tagline, because we have to bring it forward. Spay neuter is, you know, it's an essential service, but it's an essential service that we need for our animals, for our cats and dogs, and along with the, you know, rabies vaccine on top of that. There's no reason. It's all about public health. And I have had the head of a department of health actually invite our mobile spay neuter clinic into their community because they want to encourage members of their community to get their cats spayed or neutered at an affordable price. So they see it. They see it.
They do. That's a really good point. I mean, I have a board member from a major healthcare system here in the region who's on the board because he went on a tour. He walked through the spay neuter clinic. We were speaking, you know, all the same language that they talk about in human health, but we were applying it to, you know, animal health. He understood, and he, you know, he's like a pretty high level healthcare provider in that system. And now he's on the board because he understands that it's, you know, we're ensuring public health and, you know, mitigating spread of disease and, you know, reducing population growth rates and all that thing that make healthy, safer communities for all of us. So it's just kind of understanding your audience and making sure you deliver that message that'll resonate.
Stephen, if folks are interested in finding out more about your organization, how would they do that?
They could go to our website. That would be the York County SPCA's website, which is ycspca.org. And there you can find information about our awesome clinic and other community cat programs that we have established and have been building for about 4 years now.
And is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today, Stephen?
I would like to say that everybody here who's listening is awesome. Good work. Glad that you're engaging with this podcast and these topics. They're really important to us. And so we're just happy to be able to share our message and enthusiasm for this work.
And Dr. Mann, any last thoughts from you?
My last thought is just that, you know, working with community cats and trap, neuter, return is really a community effort. You know, I play my role, our other veterinary staff play their role, but then, you know, we rely on the dedicated people to trap cats, to transport cats, the caretakers who are feeding and monitoring for illness, the donors that help support the program. So it really is a community-wide effort, and none of us can do, you know, the important work that we do without the cooperation of everybody else involved. So we're very appreciative to everybody in our community who supports our clinic, who has brought their pet or a community cat to our clinic, because we can't achieve our mission without their help.
Yeah, well said. Ditto.
Well, I want to thank you both for joining me today on the show. And folks, if you're out there, please consider sharing this podcast with others, and we'll see you next time.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.